their skin. Run, 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 but you sure can't hide. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me and I'll set you free. Rap on, brother, rap on. Well, the only person talking about love, man, brother, is the preacher.
Anthony Quinn. Anthony Quinn is sitting down with us today, and I don't know. I don't really like introducing myself, because I think that if you guys know, have been following the podcast, you know it's American Riddle, and you know who I am. So, that being said, I'm sitting down with a friend of mine who I used to, colleague I used to work with briefly. His name is Anthony Quinn. And is your name Anthony Quinn? Is you named after the actor?
No, I was never. He wasn't famous when I was born. He was alive, but he wasn't famous yet.
Great actor. Anthony Quinn. Now, what's your title at Cleveland Park Wine and Spirits? I said sommelier, but I know you as, I mean, it's one of, for those of you listening, and welcome to the program, for those of you listening, Cleveland Park is one of the premier destinations to get your wine and spirits in the Washington, D.C. area. I mean, it's, I've talked about it in the podcast before, about my years in the wine business, and it's one of those go-to places that you have to go to when you're in the D.C. market. And how long have you been with them?
I've been there 13 years, and when I came on board a long time ago, my good friend that I had met at the time, named Kathy, asked me what I called myself, and I called myself the Wine Enabler.
Nice.
So that's really what I call myself, the Wine Enabler, because I'm really not a sommelier. I've got a big pet peeve about sommeliers, because they seem to be the only ones to get any attention, and of course the only people to get any attention in this business really seem to be the people in restaurants, as if because you go to a restaurant and you are served food, that clearly that's the preferred place to be, and that all the people that are going to be helping you clearly know everything that there is to know, and they're the only ones that get any attention. So that's a big pet peeve. So I told the other day, Jean-Charles Boisset, that I was really upset at him, because he did this incredible thing over at the in Baltimore at Camden Yards, and he did this incredible tasting, a sit-down tasting of Barolos, red Barolos, against his red Burgundies from the Boisset family portfolio. And he had a lovely lady he had hired from California that was a sommelier, and he had the gentleman from Black Salt there, and he also had the gentleman that was representing the Bastagnolo, I think is the name of the Bastagnolo Barolo house, and I'm not sure if he was a sommelier or not, but Jean-Charles went on and on and on about how privileged and great and wonderful it was to have the sommeliers here that had figured out what to serve for this incredible tasting. And in fact, the tasting was incredible. And my one comment to him after, because I hadn't seen him for a long time, in French, of course, was that I was a little, my pet peeve was, you know, he went on and on about sommeliers, but he never even talked about retail or the fact that there were any retailers out there. And I said, why didn't you have a retailer here? And I told everyone. I told the sommeliers that. And I told him, because from my point of view, if I was only one of the retailers there and there were others, that's insulting.
Yeah.
Why is there not a retailer they're talking about? What are we, chopped meat? Don't we know anything about wine? Don't we help customers all the time? A million times over, when the sommelier helps them maybe here and there a little bit, but not really helping them. All they're doing basically is suggesting for one meal a quick suggestion of what might work or what might
and
not
the retail,
work.
And the retailer plays a huge part. I mean, that's the go-between from the winery, the distribution chain, and to the customer. I mean, that retailer plays a key role. I was never really big on, you know, being certified or anything like that. I'm just Malcolm. I always view myself that way. I think I carry myself that way. But, I agree with you. I think it's very important to shine the light on the retailer and, you know, give them credit, because it's a huge go-between. I mean, it's very important especially for a winery, to have someone who is qualified, and not only just qualified, but who has that relationship with the customers. I did just a little bit. I didn't do a lot of research. I mean, I've known you. We've known each other for some time. It's a small community in the wine business. We all know each other in some way. I looked on Yelp, and everyone's familiar with Yelp. There's not a bad word in Yelp about Cleveland Park or you to be seen. I mean, it's something to be said, the power of whether it's social media or the internet, but it also has something to say about you as a retailer, what you do, and the relationship that you have. Anyone that knows me knows I'm big on relationships. I don't care if I'm selling wine. I don't care if I'm podcasting. My movie buddies, friends of mine, relationship is very important, and I've seen that hanging out at your shop. The handful of times that I've done wine tastings at your shop, I see the relationship and the rapport that you have with your customers. It's very important.
Well, thank you. I also have the same amount of respect for you, by the way.
Thank you.
And it's based on just the fact that we've spent time together, mostly in the store, mostly on my terms and on my turf, which is unfortunate. But the idea is to make everyone feel comfortable and welcome. It doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter whether or not they buy or not. And it's all about giving people a platform, a presence, about making them feel comfortable and good about themselves, and hopefully speaking more of the truth than less of it, and hopefully, just like you said, about relationships, which is what I live and die on that basis.
I swear you do. I mean, I follow you on Facebook. I've followed your blog. In person, and just watching Tony in person, I mean, it's something to marvel at, just the interaction that you have with, and this is Washington, D.C., let me tell you. I mean, it's way out of my territory when I used to go door-to-door with wine, but I made it a point to, you know, pick and choose some of the retailers I wanted to work with. I think I got to a level where I could pick and choose, you know, whom I worked with. And you were one of the guys that I would hang out with, and I would just watch and observe what you were doing on the floor. And you would multitask. He would be with one customer, be with two other ones, whether it's selling liquor, whether it's selling wine, and then taking pictures of people. You would be, I mean, they don't even mind the camera work. And you would post these pictures, and they are the coolest thing to see you at work with that. I mean, I applaud that.
Well, I wanted to say that I live in Virginia, by the way,
yep.
And I'm proud of that. I do work in D.C., and I'm proud of that. I'm proud that I have worked for 13 years getting to know the Cleveland Park neighborhood and being a real point of contact, a place where people can come and feel comfortable and relaxed. And I take a lot of pride in that because I think that it's very important that there is a sense of community, a sense of ownership, a sense of being responsible and not always passing the buck. And I did want to say that coming out here to Virginia to the Vienna a wine shop right now, which I think I'm seeing for the first time, I'm very impressed with what I'm seeing here and where we're doing this interview or this talk. And the young lady here by me.
It's Miriam.
Miriam,
yeah.
Nice to meet her, and I think it's important to give credit and share the credit, and I don't mind, for example, sharing the credit with other sommeliers or other wine shops, because basically I think we exist as a unit that works together, and the same thing with wholesalers, brokers, anyone else that's in the wine chain, people that do blogging, people that do almost any kind of thing that shines light on, whether it's wine, in this case it's wine, but it's equally now beer and also ciders and all the different kinds of liquor and liqueurs. I've had to change my whole modus operandi, my whole way of working has had to be refocused and redirected to shine light on equal parts on beer, liquor, liqueurs, the different bottled waters, all the different kinds of ales, ciders, everything that you can imagine, because customers today are interested in everything.
Yeah.
And we have to redefine ourselves and refocus. And
you have to evolve.
We have to evolve. And for me to come into a store that's nicely lit and obviously beautifully displayed here, even though I happen to be, in a sense, a competitor, I don't really find myself a competitor, because I feel welcome in a situation where I see quite a nice selection of wines, and I think beers and liquors are here too, or at least liqueurs maybe.
Yeah.
And then the posters, the Toulouse-Lautrec poster here just makes me feel like $1 million. Being an artist myself, a painter, a drawer, a poet, I'm very, very stimulated by visually. And so to be here in a very warm and, you know, obviously this is their back table where they greet and meet and do what I try and do at Cleveland Park.
Yeah.
It's nice to see that it's being done obviously here as well. And it's nice for me to make this discovery tonight, because to me that's really what it's about. It's not just about promoting me and Cleveland Park and the people that work there. It's also about giving credit today, for example, in Maryland, in one of the really important events. They did the Drink Local show, where unfortunately I think people had to pay for it, but at least if you were willing to pay, you had a chance to go and to understand and see, taste, meet some of the people like Rob DeFord of Bordy Winery, who has stuck it out for years and years and years, and who I met at the Mayflower Wines and Spirits, when that was owned by Sidney Moore and also by Michael Downey. I was hired by both of them, mostly by Michael, and that's where I met Robert Parker. That's when I met Bob Parker. Of course, back then he was Bob Parker.
Yeah.
And a marvelous guy, and a fun story that has nothing to do, that has all everything to do about wine. And of course, the pet phrase for him is calling him the wine god, which I think is a little
bit... he's pretty high up in the ranks.
Completely high up, and of course, Jancis Robinson. But I remember back in the past when the business was so different. It's a little scary now, and we're constantly having to prove ourselves and redefine who we are, and obviously, hopefully, work better as a team so that we keep the small part of the business that we have.
I agree with you, and I think that's that's something that I can't stress enough, is that relationship factor, whether it's a relationship with your customers or your relationship with other owners, winemakers. In this case, when you brought up the Vienna wine shop, the Vienna Vintner here, Victor started out as a competitor of mine when I used to own a wine shop. And he proved to be a very good resource, and over time, you know, one of my closest friends. And he allows me a lot of freedom, whether it's to do tastings here, to help him out on weekends, or to record this podcast. Very supportive. And the store has always been a big part of this community, Vienna. And I think that's very important, as with Cleveland Park. You guys are a staple to that community, but it goes beyond that. You know, you meet people from all over the world, and you have these relationships with them, and they don't just stop, you know, from the time you sell the bottle of wine or they leave the door, and, you know, whether you buy something theirs or not. These relationships go on for years and years and years. I mean, I am still tied to the wine business loosely, but 15 plus years, and I could just give you a call, shoot you an email, I'm like, hey, let's do this podcast. Without question, you know, he agreed. You know, it says something, and it means something to have those relationships. And I think people, they see that, and they understand it, and they respect it, whether they're doing business with you or not. And it transcends. It becomes part of us and who we are and where we're going. And like you said, as you evolve, and you might sell a white and a red or this or that, but now you're evolving to the liqueurs, you're evolving to the beers, the microbrews. I mean, there's stuff coming in, and I could not only imagine how much stuff you probably taste throughout the week. I mean, you have reps coming in. I remember coming in trying to trying to be the new guy on the street and rubbing elbows or bumping elbows trying to get your way in to a wine shop to get one of you guys to even listen to us. But I kind of thought outside the box and was like, let me just develop a relationship with this guy because I like what I see. I'm going to hang out. I'll buy something. I'll eat a sandwich next door, become part of the community. People will see me. And then that was my angle. And I thought I still believe that that's the best part is to be a part of that whole area. And then I think people become your friend, and then people want to do business with people who they're friendly with. That's what I think. And that's how I hit it off with you the brief moment I was in that area. I think one of my colleagues, I think you know him, Antonio Cabibi, took over the account. Great guy from Italy and kind of a cross between Paul McCartney and Serpico. he's a wonderful guy. I still speak to him on a regular basis or when we can on social media. But that relationship is key. I mean, it's very important.
Well, so, he still keeps in touch with me, and we're friends on Facebook, which is nice. And I got an email, not an email, but I got a message from him not too long ago. But the older I get, which I say the younger I get, of course, because as I always like to say, I'm getting younger with time instead of older, which I prefer to be thought of as someone who is always, I like to think of myself as at the front of the line, trailblazing to begin with. If I can't trailblaze, then I'm going back and seeing all the things that have not been picked up by other people that they've been too busy, unfortunately, or fortunately for me, looking for the things that have scores and points and nice glossy pictures, advertisements, and so forth, and so I can pick up some amazing things that have been left behind. But Malcolm, the real key and the issue, first of all, I do love to support local. I think it's marvelous to be able to support everything that we can that's either on the East Coast, first of all. I did a blog today, and I amended it, and I named two people godfathers in the business today, and one is Chris Smith. And I want to give attention to him because he was one of the, he's younger than the other godfather, so I didn't immediately call him a godfather, but he's the young godfather of the East Coast because he basically put the East Coast wines on the map back in the 80s, and I admire him greatly for that. The other godfather happens to be a little older, and his name is Jim Stutzman, and he has done what Chris did all over the whole country by going all over the country on his motorcycle. He is, in fact, a drummer for the National Opera here.
Wow.
And on his spare time, he would go around and visit all the wineries in different states, bring back the wines, and he'd call you up because he is an old timer, which I love that there are still some old timers that are not on the internet. And either you get the marvelous thing with Jim Stutzman is you actually get a postcard. You actually get a card. You get a letter. You get something that's tangible.
Yeah, imagine that.
And you have to read it, you know, and it's in his own writing. And I just adore that. But so here you have two godfathers, one that represents the old United States because Jim would come back with all of his finds, call you up and say, come over. He'd ask you to bring a bottle of wine. Which he would keep, but he would then share 15, 20 bottles with everyone.
Nice.
And people like Dave McIntyre, who writes for the Washington Post right now, is a big fan of Jim's as well and has been to a lot of his tastings and credits Jim for a lot of why he has been such a local and a go local and a go green fan for years now. And I'm proud of Dave. I'm proud of Jim. I'm proud of Chris. I'm proud that I know these people, and and I'm proud of for my contribution. So I went back and I actually dubbed these two guys Godfather.
And for the listeners, what's the name of your blog and how can they find it?
Well, the blog is called Chat Wine, on blogspot.com. And it's various blogs. The most important one, simply because it's the one where I see the most people, is Chat Wine, but I do chat art, and I do chat poetry. I also do chat Brazil. I do chat France. I pretty much chat Australia, chat Austria. Anywhere in the world that I've been, I chat about.
So you're pretty well traveled then.
Yeah, it's a little insane. But I do want to say that one of the issues that I found as I've gotten younger with age and had to compete with everyone, even more than I ever feel like I've had to compete in the past, is that I'm competing on a level which I think, unfortunately, I don't know that it's, I think it's respected and well seen, but I think that, unfortunately, I'm playing a losing game in the sense that I'm defending and standing up for the little guy, always standing up for the little guy, no matter who it is in the world, needs a voice. And that means that you, when you came from International Sellers, was someone that you came originally with the lovely wines from Daniel Lancet, which was the Loire Valley Sauvignon Blanc that I just fell in love with because I knew Danielle. You knew her too.
Yeah.
And she came one day and did a tasting in our store with her lovely daughter. I knew her husband. But what put you on the map for me wasn't the fact that you brought me Danielle Lancet, who I already knew, was the fact that you brought me some fabulous little wine, white wine from Hungary, as I recall, made from some obscure little grape like Robert or what was that grape called?
We had Irsay Olivier.
Olivier, the Olivier grape. Yeah. Who's ever heard of the Olivier grape?
I was known in the D.C. market as a Hungarian wine guy. Yeah, that was great, actually. That took some serious hustle to put Hungary, or not really to put them on the map, but to redefine what people think of the Hungarian wine region. And that took, I used to walk in up and down so many streets of D.C. and so many stores banging on doors and try to get a quick word in, and it was tough. It took some time, but the stores like Cleveland Park definitely were supportive, and what you just said about supporting the little guys and girls out there that are producing some obscure grapes that people haven't had. It's important. It's important to shine a light on these areas that people don't think of. It's so true. You come into a store and you think, give me the best Chardonnay or the best Merlot or the best Cab that you have. But who the hell is waking up thinking of Irsay Olivier? You know,
right?
And it's just as refreshing as Sauvignon Blanc. It's I found it to. It was
more flavorful.
Oh, it was just
more
just
body.
So much fun.
It was a conversation piece.
Yes.
But you said it was important. I think it's absolutely essential. We're fighting a death or life battle right now. In this whole business, every retail business is fighting for their lives, and we as small enterprises absolutely have to do more work. We have to do it better. We have to educate the customer better. We have to do so much more for the customer to make it easier for them to go into a Whole Foods or into a Trader Joe's or into any other place you can imagine, a Price Club. And say, oh, look at that. I bought that from Malcolm. Introduced that to me years ago. What's your name again, ma'am? Miriam. Miriam might have introduced Joe or John or Frank or Megan or Ellie. You know, remember Ellie May? Maybe Ellie May drank a wine at some point in her life, you know, from the Hillbillies, the great what's that Hillbilly show?
The Beverly Hillbillies.
Hillbillies.
Right. Ellie May.
Ellie May. So maybe Ellie May bought a wine from one of us at some point, and we made a difference. But the point is, we are fighting for our lives, because we are dealing with a society, and today we're really dealing with a few people, just like the country is, a few people that are calling the shots. And unfortunately, they are masquerading, they're hiding. They are basically undercover. They're under the radar, but they are everywhere. And I am absolutely shocked, scared shitless right now.
A lot of those the same people that are dominating the world, far as putting out mass produced wines or wine shops, or you know, they're setting up shop to look like mom and pop shops. I think Starbucks.
Trader Joe's is a great example. It's owned, I think, by very, very talented Dutch and or Germans. I can't remember, but it's definitely not. It's definitely owned by people in Europe, as I recall.
And see, what happens, and I talked about this back when I had my wine shop. But what happens is That is the beginning of the end of community as we know it. There's nothing wrong with big business. I'm fine with that and profit and all that stuff. But when it's just you're just getting a product and you're just pushing a product and you're just trying to, you know, get numbers and make numbers and not be personable, not know the person's name that comes in to the shop, not know their daughter or their son or when they're graduating or what soccer team they play on, there's something missing. And there's something missing that takes away from the community. Because every day you can drive down the road, even here in Vienna, you can drive down the road and you'll see businesses that are closing. You can go into D.C. and you see businesses closing, and they put up these high-rises, and they're putting up these convenience stores and stuff. And, yeah, it is convenient, but at the same time, look at the cost. Look at what it's costing us. And it's basically going to isolate us in a hole where we don't even know each other, and we're already there.
The young ones are anyway.
Yes, yes.
And I'm a young
they
one.
Don't send
I'm a young one at heart, but I'm an old one. Well, I'm a mature, I'm a seasoned one.
And to the point where they don't send postcards or write letters anymore. It's nothing tangible. I've told this story before, I think, on the podcast, where I recently bought my son, Justin, a vinyl record player, just so we could experience what it is to have something tangible and the meaning behind it, that someone had to create the art, that they had to press the vinyl, that, you know, there's an artist out there that's working his tail off to do this and to get it into your hands, not so you... And I'm fine with downloading stuff, but at the same time, you have to appreciate and respect everything that goes into it, everything that goes into, you know, the crushing of the grape, the planting of the grapes, the time it takes even before you plant the grapes for wine. So all that stuff is very important, and it's something that we should protect. And
we need to.
And I'm happy that you brought that up, because that's very important.
The problem today is that the and I'd be happy to tell this to anyone, I'm my worst enemy, really, because I speak too much, and I speak clearly, and I speak sometimes in a sense, in a way that people don't understand, because I'm an artist, I'm a painter, or I break things up, I rearrange them, I look for novel ways to present something. But what I don't do, and what is absolutely essential, is I try never to hide the truth. And for me, the truth today is that if you start with a concept and you start with an idea in a beautiful office somewhere, and then you figure out, well, once that I've got my concept, let's try and come up with a label, then let's try and come up with a package for the label, and then let's finally figure out what we're going to put in that package, whether or not it's a bottle, a plastic, a box, whatever. I mean, the cutesy names today for everything, And this is one of the things I did in my mind to prepare for this, because I've had about a week to think about this coming here tonight, was that what are some of my pet peeves? Well, I've already told you one is about retailers and restaurateurs. I think that, you know, we should give equal time and equal credit to the shops that are really, in essence, do more than the restaurants. And I would say I would be happy to defend this with any sommelier, with any amount of credentials, that the bottom line is that fair is fair. Let's be willing and open enough and not pigheaded and not stubborn and not hide behind labels and hide behind titles. So let's just talk man to woman to man, whatever. Let's be open about it, and let's realize that our world is our retail world is really dying away, because we are doing the easy thing, which is so often. One of the customers came in today, a gentleman that told me he bought all of his clothes online.
Yeah.
And for once in my life, I held my tongue. I didn't say anything about that. But my normal response to that, to give you an example, I bought a book online, and I was embarrassed. I'm a little ashamed of myself, and I'm going to tell you why. I bought a line from Amazon, and I bought a book from Amazon, and it was the New American Wine Book by Janssen Robinson that she's co-authored with Linda Murphy, who, from what I understand, actually did most of the writing. Janssen did most of the editing. I bought it online. I think I paid $35. If I'd bought it at the Natural History Museum, where she came on March 21st, Thursday that evening to do a first of all a conversation with Dave McIntyre, then a book selling and a book signing, and then thirdly to do a tasting up in the rotunda where the beautiful elephant is with the different states that were represented there, states like Texas and Michigan and places like Colorado and like Virginia and New York. And finally, yes, there was one, and this you're going to love. You will adore this. There was one reference to California, and the winery being poured, one that you know and love dearly, is Bokish.
Yeah.
And so in the conversation, and this is a little plug for me. I'm sorry that I'm doing a little plug for myself. You know, I apologize for it
advance.
But and during the conversation between Genesis Robinson and Dave McIntyre, who had already plugged this Bokish winery on stage, and this whole thing was being filmed, which is a lovely thing, they said, and by the way, and who does a Graciano out of California? And they couldn't figure it out. And I said, finally, well, you know, Bokish does a Graciano. Yeah. And they both said, they were happy that I mentioned it. So I'm thrilled I did, because someone had asked about that, who was doing a Graciano, and I don't quite exactly know how Graciano came up, but there it was, that here we have someone who writes about wine and is incredibly well organized and methodical, Genesis Robinson, one of the great collectors and providers of information to the world. Dave McIntyre, who does what he does as a secondary job, and he does it very well, but it's still a secondary job for him. Both of these people didn't know, in fact, that Bokish, that they were talking about, made a Graciano. So I'm happy in my little tiny way that I was able to stand up for other retailers, all the retailers of the world. I know I'm being horrible right now.
No,
and
it's
saying,
important.
There's the grape, Graciano, Bokish. You've already mentioned that. Let's...
Well, that's one of the things that...
terrible, I'm sorry.
That's one of the things that I look at closely. I've had offers recently to get back into the wine business on a full-time basis. But one of the things I look at is that mentality. What is the mentality of the company I'm going to align myself up with? And what type of wineries do they have? Bokish is a really good example. I like that because this was a family that spent some time, lived in Spain, and they moved out to California, and they wanted to bring the environment that they lived in to California and make a small production. I mean, some of those wines from Bokish, I think there were 200 cases, something like that, when I was representing them, and it was kind of tough to sell. I think it would retail for $30 plus a bottle of Graciano. To sell that in the market when other people are selling Cabernet from Napa, or they're selling Zins from Sonoma and Russian River, or Pinot Noir, it's an uphill battle.
But it is. But it's spectacular to be able to take a winery like Bokish that actually makes wines that from grapes that come from Europe, the Graciano from Spain originally, and yet it does taste good. It is a contender, whether or not it's as good for the money as the Spanish version, really, in this particular case, is not a relevant point, because, in fact, what's happened with the world and what's happened with Europe is they've had so many grape varieties, probably 5,000 to 10,000 different indigenous grape varieties, that they can't focus on all of them. So here you have a vineyard in California actually making either a 75 or 85% Graciano, or maybe 100%. By law, they don't have to have it be 100%, so we don't know that. But at least they were focusing completely on Graciano, whereas in Spain, it's always been used as a blending grape primarily.
Yeah,
so
Tempranillo.
I can't think of a Spanish version of Graciano that exists in Spain, just like I can't think of in France, Petit Verdot Red, which comes from the Bordeaux area, which usually constitutes 2 or 3% of Bordeaux blend, the Meritage idea. But 2 or 3% is nothing. And yet in Virginia, they are doing brilliant bottlings of Petit Verdot. And I was thrilled to hear Genesis Robinson talk about how excited she was about the Petit Verdots of Virginia.
Oh, great.
That's bravo. Bravo, bravo, bravo. Yeah. So even though you have a writer who is incredibly brilliant at consolidating and putting together a lot of information, which not everyone can do. Here she's pioneering and actually championing the Petit Verdot grape in Virginia, which I think is going to outshine the Cabernet Franc grape in Virginia, because you can't compare it to something being made in France. And so it will either stand or it will fall on its own strength. But that, in my opinion, is spectacular. And I'm thrilled that maybe Virginia will have a Petit Verdot that people will say, wow, this is the greatest Petit Verdot. And we aspire to make a great Petit Verdot like they have been making in Virginia for the last 20, 30, 40. I'm talking, of course, we'll unfortunately be deceased maybe at that point. But someone in the future will be talking about Virginia and saying, oh, my gosh, can we make a good Petit Verdot like they make in Virginia?
And that's, I think that also is great that someone is pointing that out, because I remember working retail and people would just hammer Virginia wines. And, you know, there's not everyone can make, you know, Virginia may not be suited to make Pinot Noir, but yes, Petit Verdot, Cab Franc, Viognier does very well here. The Shards do very well. I went to visit Arizona and I discovered some really nice wines out there. So I think that.
What were they?
Grenache. I found some really good Grenache there.
From what vineyard?
I'd have to search my archives. And I think there's a.
It wasn't Arizona Stronghold, was it?
No. I can't remember off the top of my
head. How did you do that?
What do you mean?
How did you get out there to do this?
I think I went on vacation or something. I happened to go to a wine. Whenever I see a wine shop, I kind of like to walk in there and just kind of play the humble role, like I'm just a customer to see how their setup is. And they were doing a tasting, and I went through a flight, and there was a bunch of
Arizona wines, all Arizona wines.
All Arizona wines. I think there's a, what's the guy's name? He's a rock and roll musician.
Yeah, you're talking about Maynard Keenan.
Yeah, he's got a phenomenal
Tool.
Yep.
A full circle for all of you younger.
Yeah.
See, I don't even know that music.
Yeah.
But I did get to meet Eric, the winemaker, and of course Maynard owes me because I really worked for years to sell his wine, not because he's a musician, it's because he's famous, but because in fact I believe in representing wines from the different states and letting the customer decide whether or not it's good enough for them to drink. I shouldn't be the one to stand in there and say, oh, well, that quality isn't good enough,
yeah,
so I'm not going to sell it. And then yet the customer comes in and says, do I have that wine? Am I always going to be the one that is going to be decide for a customer whether or not it's good enough or bad enough for them? That, to me, is another one of my pet peeves. That should be a customer's decision.
Absolutely, and people would always ask, and I think, Miriam, you could agree to this, people, well, what's the best wine? Well, it's the one you like. It's not what I like, because our palates are going to be different. The key thing of a good retailer is knowing their customer and knowing their palate, getting to know them. It takes a little bit more time than if you're shopping at Trader Joe's or at Costco or something like that. Not to diminish what they're doing, but at the same time, you know, we have to be able to look at that customer in the eye when they come in and when they ask, you know, pick out a Chardonnay that I would like. You know, and Mrs. Jones that comes in, you know, she doesn't like oak. She likes stainless steel. She might, you know, like something that isn't, you know, heavily oaked or too acidic. So you have to get to know these people. And I think once you do get to know them, they appreciate it and they make it a point to come back and frequent the establishment, you know, the quote-unquote little guy. And I think that's what's going to keep us going, and that's what's kept, you know, you guys in business. For how long has Cleveland Park been around?
Well, Cleveland Park was originally the Woodley, which was part of the Calvert Woodley when Calvert's store on Wisconsin Avenue merged with the Woodley on Connecticut Avenue where we are. So it was the original Woodley, and I have a salesperson that I've known for forever that doesn't come very often, Eddie O'Forey, that sells different products, including a really good rum, the famous Goslings. And Eddie used to work with Ed Sands at the Woodley, which is now Cleveland Park. And one of the greatest things that I feel that I can add to the equation today, and that I'm a little bit of a fighter about more than I ever was, even when I was younger, but is the idea of let's give a nod to the history and to the past and how we got here. Let's not think that everything was just, there's just the now without a past. There's a reason for why things are the way they are and why we have what we have and the situations that we have. And just like I gave credit to Chris Smith and to Jim Stutzman, I think it's important to give credit to these people. And for example, the local wineries that were in existence so long ago that I got to know, like Allegro and Bordy, were both mentioned in Dave McIntyre's article this Wednesday. And I was really proud about that, because these are people at Allegro Winery. You know, Malcolm asked me, by the way, to come up with some stories. Well, I have some stories. We could do hours of this. But one of my favorite stories is there was a dessert, well, not a dessert, but there was a white wine that was made, I think, either from Saval or from Vidal, and they put some peach into it. And that was sold at the winery Allegro in Pennsylvania a long time ago by Tim and John Crouch, I think is the last name, two brothers that owned the vineyard. And they had a white wine that had a green and white label on it with a leaf on it, a wine leaf, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it was called Opus One. Oh. And guess who had to go and buy that name from the Crouches? But the Mondavis. And Robert Mondavi either did it over the phone, because there was no internet back then. He either did it over the phone or he went in person, but he had to go and talk to the Crouches. And I don't know if he paid for it. Or
wonder what he paid for that name. Wow.
And I have one of the original bottles of the Opus One. And I'm never going to drink it.
Oh, you have a picture of that?
Well, not only have a picture, I have the bottle. I'll have to take a picture and put it on one of my blogs. I haven't done it yet. Mm-hmm. But I'm proud of that, because there shows the relationship of things. There shows the history, the fact that things are not always just what we associate and the most obvious. Sometimes there are little tiny stories behind a story, behind another story, that really tell the full story. And that's what we can do. That's what I can do as someone who has a little bottle age in me, some of the story about the wine today.
And I just nodded at Miriam, because I was talking earlier about some of the music that I play in the opening of the podcast and the end, how they're older songs. And some of the younger cats coming up, there's a meaning behind it. I don't just put something on the internet, or I don't post something just for the hell of it. There's a meaning. And whether you ask me or email me or take the time up to look it up, there's something behind it. And I'm glad that you said that about the wine Opus One, because I had no idea about that. And I find that fascinating. Yes.
Well, you know what? I mean, and the idea for me is that it's important to give people a platform. And that's a customer. That's it can be anyone. It can be the winemaker. It can be the owner of a winery. It can be the broker. It can be the distributor. It could be you, Malcolm. That's why I'm happy to say what I'm saying about you, because clearly, for me, it's all about relationships. And you did prove yourself many, many times, and I would continue to give you business if you were still in the business. And if you got back in the business, I would give you business, because
I got that recorded.
Because because clearly you showed me things at the time that were meaningful for me to share with our customers, and not only were you willing to share that with us, you were willing to come in and taste the wines and do your part of the job and spend some quality time in the store. Even when you weren't actually selling, you spent some time there, as I recall. And that's invaluable, because in today's day and age, and I'm reticent to talk about it or to say it, but clearly, and so often today, people want to know what's in it for them. Well, it's not a bad idea to know what's in it for you, but it's also a good idea to prove yourself and to have people look at you and feel what they might want to do for you because you've proven yourself, and not to expect something before you prove yourself. And you did it the hard way. You proved yourself. You spent the 4, 5, 6, 7 calls, and you didn't give up on us. We are a small store, just like right here we are in Virginia, the same thing. This is a small store. We're both rectangles. And one of the nice things I like to talk about rectangles, here we are in Vienna. This is one rectangle in Vienna. In Cleveland Park, we're another rectangle.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you how much joy it gives me to know how much has actually happened in each of these rectangles. I don't know what's happened in this store, but I know that there have been some really meaningful exchanges.
Yeah.
Things that have happened, people that have come in with their babies,
yeah.
Pregnant ladies, you know. Unfortunately, sometimes someone has passed away, so there has been some appreciation, some mention of that. Someone
comes
in.
Yeah, some couples meet. Some people meet
they
and get
meet,
married. Yeah.
And they meet, they get married, they come in, and the store will bring you back like they do here, and they'll give you a nice glass of Zinfandel, like the one we're drinking right now from California, which is which one?
Yep. Where would you do at the bottle, Miriam? Miriam,
what are we drinking? It's perfectly pleasant. It's Martinelli. Wow.
Martinelli, more of a fruit-driven style.
Yeah, but Martinelli is really, really
big and bold too. Yeah, wow. I was waiting on you to get here, and I was three sheets to the wind after two glasses.
Gosh, this is a Martinelli. It's only one of the great. I haven't even sold this for years, but here's one of the great California wineries.
Mm.
And I got to say, Russian River Valley, Vigneto de Evo or Eva? Diva. I'm not sure. Is it Evo or Eva?
Miriam's the linguist.
Evo with an O. Martinelli is only considered one of the truly phenomenal producers. I didn't know this was Martinelli. I wasn't paying enough attention. But I do want to say that it has been enjoyable to drink, and I'm shocked that it's 16.45% alcohol, which
I'm not. I'm
I normally pick up on that, you know. But in this case, it's so well integrated into the wine that I did think it was had alcohol.
Yeah,
it was a little more than I like, but I mean, but yet there's an elegance, a purity of the fruit, you know, a gentleness, a voluptuousness, a kindness, a willingness to share, to be open, to be exposed, to be vulnerable. There's a vulnerability of fruit to this Martinelli, which is truly, truly marvelous because it stands on its own, and either you like it or you don't, but it doesn't parade to be anything but what it is. The one detractor I would say about the wine is that I would like to have a little bit more terroir to the wine.
Me too, yeah. Yeah,
the wine is delicious. It does lack a little terroir. I think in the past they've had more terroir. But I have to say that it's been enjoyable to drink this while we're doing this podcast.
And that, folks, is why he has excellent, outstanding relationships with his customers. Because I've seen him at work talking the way he just described this wine. And you're spot on. That's what Miriam and I had the same conversation. I was this is more of a, you know, big fruit forward, as we say, a fruit bomb style. And I was like, I should have went with something from Italy. I like a little bit more terroir. And
This was good. This was good because it's always nice. It's
good for the summer, the barbecue.
It is. It's perfect for that. And maybe
ribs.
A little bit of a chill would be even nicer because that would rein it in a little bit more. But I think that what's important in life is that we need to always be ready to be humbled.
Yes.
You know, it's nice that we might think that we're hot shit or that we do good things or that we add things. But really the only thing that really matters at the end of the day is that someone was willing to say that about you and about your operation and about the wine. In other words, it's nice that we're strong enough to defend ourselves and to feel good and confident about what we do and what we add to the world. And I do feel very good because at the nighttime when I go to bed, I can sleep. I might have done a few things that I might have been a little kinder, a little nicer, a little less selfish. But overall, I really don't feel like I've screwed the world over. And I know that's another thing I shouldn't be tooting my own horn, but I don't feel overall that I've done anything really negative to the world. I hope I've added something. And I think that anyone that can feel that, that is looking at what they do more as in adding to the community and being, and also respecting the community and respecting the village that we live in, you know, Hillary, I mean, let's give her some thanks for the whole idea about a village. Well, you know, we are a village. Our actions are, we need to stand up for our actions. We need to occasionally say that we screwed up or that we didn't screw up, but we need to be responsible. And today, in today's day and age, there's less and less people willing to take responsibility for their actions. In Hampi, for example, to sell a wine that gets a 95-point score, because, you know, I like to kid around and say that what did the wine advisor give it? Well, the wine advisor doesn't exist. The wine advocate does, but so I use the word wine advisor because I know that no one knows it. And people in the business will say, well, I'm not sure what the wine advisor gave it because they don't know that I'm pulling their leg.
Yeah.
But I'm not really doing it to be nasty and horrible, but I'm doing it to make a point that who gives a shit, really, what the wine advisor gives it. And I will tell a customer, why do you give a shit what they give it? You can't talk to them, but you can come back and talk to me because I've told you what I give it. And I've been honest about it, and I'm here, and you know where to find me. You can come back, and I'm a face. I'm someone that can't hide from you, and I wouldn't hide from you. And I'm willing to stand up for my own opinion. I'm willing to put my neck on the block, just like Malcolm. You were willing to put your neck on the block when you sold that Olivier White from Hungary. And all those Hungarians must be singing, you know, little silent hallelujahs for you because you championed the Olivier grape for years.
Yeah.
That's important. I mean, that is important. Those people in Hungary are thankful. And if they're not, they should be because they just don't know that you're the one that was championing.
Yeah, I think the people behind it do. And I was fortunate enough to take a trip to Hungary and visit the wineries and, you know, explore a place where I never dreamed that I would go. I mean, I've had a chance to go all over the world, you know, because I was part of the wine business. But it goes back to what you said about people that always say, you know, I'm thinking about this, about what's in it for them, that mentality, what's in it for them, or it doesn't affect them right now. It's not in their, you know, circle.
Best interest.
Oh, my gosh. Everyone's
what's in it for me? Is it my best interest? Well, if you do your whole life that way, if it's all a calculation, that's a numerical calculation. Well, where is the chance? Where is the serendipity? Where is the a possibility of discovering something just because you were open to things? You have to be open to things.
It reminds me about something that happened earlier today. Miriam was closing up, and a customer came running in a panic. And, you know, Miriam was tired. She'd work God knows how many hours she worked today. And she had already shut the system down. But I kind of butted in and said, oh, you know, even though the system's down, we take cash. And that's just my nature. It's my nature to, you know, to have that customer service, that instinct, and it just popped out. And I told Miriam, I'm sorry. I'm sure you know, wanted to close or maybe.
So what happened? Did the customer get a bottle of wine?
Absolutely.
Or not?
Absolutely. Well, actually, she got more than one. She had a gift for someone's anniversary or something, and picked out some beers and all that good stuff. But the point is, it's kind of in you.
So you know, Miriam and you made a customer.
Yeah.
Right? You did. And they're going to be loyal. They're going to be loyal to you whenever they can.
Oh.
If they happen to be in a Whole Foods, or they happen to be in a Trader Joe's, or they happen to be in a Harris Teeter, or some other store buying some
food.
Oh,
when that close sign goes up, or when that door's shut and someone pulls
on it? They might buy something somewhere else. But they will come and give you the business, and they're going to do it because they're going to remember that, and they're going to feel a little bit guilty. And my customers often tell me, they say, you know, Tony, I'm a little scared to tell you. I'm a little embarrassed to tell you that I was somewhere else. And they say it with trepidation. And I say, you know, look, I'm glad, John, that you told me that, Eric, you know, Miriam, you know, Alan, whoever the person is that's told me that. But you know what? I like that because they at least understand that it's important that today that people realize, just like I did with the buying of the book on Amazon of the American. See, I didn't realize I could buy it at the Smithsonian. So I bought it to have a copy. But I would have paid the extra $15 to the Smithsonian or to any other operation that was in business, that was a retail business, to buy that product because that keeps them in business. And all these people that think, you know, that it doesn't hurt you in the end because it's just one bottle. Well, one bottle does add up because it becomes two and it becomes three, it becomes six. And all of a sudden, all of us legitimate operations that are wine, beer, spirits, liquor, cider, water, we are legitimate operations operating with respect for other legitimate operations. But the big boys, the big girls, whoever's behind these things, in my opinion, are not. They are operating under another guise, and they're hoping they can get away with it because we won't notice. Well, you know what? God damn it, I do notice. And it pisses the shit out of me that there are these big, I'm sorry, Malcolm, you don't have to put this in, these big goddamn motherfuckers that think they can get away with it. Well, God damn it, have them come talk to Anthony Quinn, and I will tell them, you guys are a bunch of shits.
Yeah.
And I'll be happy to tell them because you know what? You are. Ultimately, you shouldn't sleep at night. You are a bunch of bastards.
Yeah.
You're fucking us all over. You're not respecting boundaries and frontiers and guidelines. You're walking over it. You're taking your money. You're taking your lawyers. You're taking whatever else you have, and you're a bunch of real assholes because you're not respecting the integrity of the community, the integrity of a neighborhood, the integrity of a cul-de-sac, the integrity of a store, the integrity of anything where people are involved. You are not. They are not these big corporations. And that's why I'm not keen on representing the gallows of the world. I'm not,
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir.
The Yellowtails, for example. And I got to tell you, I do sell Yellowtail in the store, and I'm going to tell you why. Because one of the owners, John Casella, came to our store and spent an hour in Cleveland Park and sold his reserve lines. And he was the nicest, humblest guy in the world, and I respected that. And so Yellowtail is still in the store. But because he was there, he became part of the Cleveland Park family, part of the community that you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I have the exact same stance. You know, I'm glad to know that you're as passionate about the corporations and the masquerade party that's going on as I am and as I have been, whether it's in the wine business or it could be in film, could be radio. The reason why I'm doing this podcast is very aligned with what you believe in. It's just a massive takeover, and they're feeding you shit. There are people that are younger than I am, and they just know shit. They just know
they
crap
don't know.
Stuff.
They
and
don't know.
Why and they think that it's good, whether it's wine, whether it's movies, television shows. I mean, I talk about it all day, every day, and they don't know the difference because if everything that you've been fed since a child has been crap, then if you get something that's like subpar, you probably think it's just phenomenal. And it's not the case. It's what's going on. How do we stop it? We stop it by educating. We stop it by talking to customers. We stop it by letting someone in when the close sign goes up and servicing them. After the close sign goes up, we do a podcast in a wine shop with another retailer. This is what we do.
I'm very thankful to be here, and that's why I wanted to give credit to the store where we are. I don't like to come into a store and have you say nice things about me and not me reciprocate, because I think it's important to give credit to every operation that's a legitimate operation doing a legitimate job. And no one would know that unless we said it, because it's not being filmed.
No.
But I think it's really, really important to give credit where credit is due, and we all add to the equation, and we all give something to the community and to our neighborhood and to the people that account on us. And so I don't like to – that whole idea that you can get away with it, that people won't know, that people don't need to know, that they that you could have not said anything, to me doesn't hold. It's just not good, because you know it's only because we're able to be here that we can do this. And so I have to say, as a part of the wine community, I'm thrilled to be welcomed here by both of you, and that's important to me. You know, and if I'd met the owner, I would say the same thing to the owner. of the store here, and because we really work as a group, we share our business. But I like it that I'm sharing it. I don't mind sharing it with a legitimate operation like this one, because that's what it's about. I mean, I should be sharing it with a legitimate operation that makes its money selling what it claims to be selling and that doesn't keep adding on one thing after the other just so that they can be more to their customer. And a point that I wanted to make about that was years ago for the ANCA in Washington, D.C., I was finally asked after Walgreens lawyers had stood up and told the group that was gathered there all the reasons why it was all right for them to add wine to their portfolio of drugs. And they said, well, they had had requests for some wine. And so the Walgreens staff said, well, why can't we be more to our customers? Well, when I was finally addressed by name as Tony, what would you like to say? They actually knew who I was. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
I was part of the community. They didn't know the lawyers, but they knew who I was, mm-hmm. and they'd call me Tony. Again, I'm tooting my horn. I'm sorry about that. I apologize for it. But the bottom line is they knew who I was. They asked me what I thought, and I said, well, that's fine, so why don't I go ahead and sell some drugs? I'll sell some aspirin. I'll sell some other things, and that way I'll take back from them some of the business they're taking from me. And then, of course, the lawyers got all huffy about that and thought...
Cutting into their turf.
Yeah, cutting into their turf.
Yeah.
Well, what the hell do they think they're doing in my turf? In other words, there's no respect anymore today. It's the bullies, it's the Goliaths, taking over
Target.
The Davids.
I made a joke many years ago, 11 years ago, as a matter of fact, and it may come true one day. I said, before long, you're going to be able to get wine at Toys R Us. Because it's everywhere. You can go to Target. You can go to Walmart. It's case stacks of stuff that's $3 for a Chard or Sauvignon Blanc, whatever. And, yeah, it's...
Well, it's tough. And it's hurting legitimate business. And it saddens me. It makes me cry. I cry a lot. It makes me cry.
It is sad. It's sad because a lot of
My family knows I'm emotional. I get romantic comedies. Just talk about movies. We haven't talked about movies at all. Sorry, Malcolm.
No, we will.
I'm so passionate about goddamn wine that you want to talk about movies. I know you did. But I'm so goddamn passionate about wine that we haven't hardly had a word in there about movies. So I apologize for that. But the bottom line is that, it's important to work as a team, and we can all exist as a community, and we have to respect each other as a community, and that means on every single level. And I feel blessed and grateful to have done what I've been able to do in Washington, D.C., in a small community, Cleveland Park. It's only one small community. Here's one in Vienna. What's the name of this community in Vienna? Is there a specific pocket of Vienna that this is a part of, or...
Old Town Vienna.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, so this store gives back to their community. I mean, to me, that's legitimate. I think that's marvelous. I applaud that. That is, because they do it not only on the level of, like you said, about the about providing a service, whether it's a beer or possibly a cider or a bottled water, or obviously all the different wines in the world. They also are a point where people can come and they can be themselves, hopefully.
Yeah.
And they can relax. They can be appreciated for who they are as an individual. They can hopefully know that someone's going to know that their name is actually Bob, that maybe they have a daughter that's 3 years old that's named Alice. And, of course, the big people are laughing at us. The big companies are saying, oh, Tony, he's such a jerk.
Yeah.
He's missed all the opportunities he could because he's trusted, he's believed in just the idea of being basically humble and basically doing what's right for a community where he could have done so much more to advance his own career and do so much more to make more money and so much more to whatever. But clearly where money is involved somewhere. And it's maddening being an artist and a painter and not thinking that way to see the people that have done that. But I also have to say, what have they sacrificed for it? And what part of their soul have they sold? And who have they sold it to? And are they able to sleep? Do they feel good? Do they, of course, you know, I'm the joke, or we're the joke, the people that are the humble people, because ha, 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 you know, we've been stupid about it. Well, you know, I don't think we have. We maybe haven't made as much money as we could.
I think we're
stupid about it.
No.
Come on, give me a break. Put a millionaire in front of me. Put a billionaire in front of me. Have we been stupid? No, we haven't been stupid. No. We've been honest, and we've had integrity, and we've had respect, and we've had honor.
I agree.
And we have let the buck stop with us when it needs to stop with us, as opposed to riding on someone else's coattails and not telling the truth and not being forthcoming and not being available, not being visible, not being someone that can be contacted, and hiding.
Yeah.
We're not hiding. We don't hide.
And what you're fighting for, what we are fighting for, is everything that's made America great and America what it is. And that's the community. That's the people. You know, for the people.
And it can be in film, too, by the way. Yeah. I love film, by the way. I absolutely
love
film.
Do.
I'm sorry we're talking about wine. But film is another art, too.
Well, I know. Like I said, I follow you on social media. And one of the things that I notice, you post a lot of art, whether it could... I know you like boobies, because I've seen some nude art pop up, which is kind of cool and distracting.
I'm going to tell you why I can't post the men, because if you post too many men, then all of a sudden, that's not art, you know.
Yeah.
That's
lewd.
More sexual. That's more...
homoerotic.
It's just whatever it is. But that's the problem. That's the society we live in, where we have all these different stigmas.
Yeah, he'll post some stuff that distracts me. Almost takes me way off course.
And sometimes I post it
your
for...
Marilyn Monroe stuff that you post.
I love those. And
I know you do.
And unfortunately, my great, great friend, Stephen Daddario, who was the actual gentleman who colorized all those old pictures of Marilyn and posted them, he passed away about 2 to 3 weeks ago. And he was another champion. He was another godfather for the old films. And he knew that I loved Marilyn. That's the only reason I saw so many Marilyn. It could have been... you know, Joan Crawford, or it could have been, he did all the old great actresses. He loved them all. I mean, it didn't matter. Barbara Stanwyck, he loved them all. I mean, my God, Stephen Daddario, one of the sweethearts of the world. And what I need to say about him is that not only was he a sweetheart of the world, but what he did for his family was he believed in family. He took care of his mom when she was unfortunately failing, and then he passed away, and then he did the same for his father, and he did it in an apartment in Kennedy Warren, and I got to tell you, that meant more to me than anything else that he ever did, because he did everything for me, shared everything, but yet he did so much for the family unit, which is what we can do. We can hopefully aspire to be as good as noble as respectable as conscientious as giving as opposed to what's in it for me.
Exactly. And that's what I picked up from you. We talked earlier. I mean, you and I just talked briefly. I don't know what I'm going to talk about with you. You asked me, but I had a sense that we were on the same page. I mean, I can, without question, I can learn a lot from you.
And well, I learned from you too, Malcolm. Let me tell you, it works both ways. It's not that you're learning from me. It's that we're learning from each other.
Yeah, and that's the relationship.
And it's just a common respect for each other.
Absolutely.
And just like I've hopefully given you the idea that I respect some other people that have been there in my life as well. And that's all important, because the one thing that I will say, and the one thing that I felt really important in what you're adding and what I'm adding, is that we're, with our photographs, and with you're doing the podcast, I'm not doing that. I thought about it, but I just...
Well, you're doing it now.
Thank you. But I didn't have the wherewithal to do it. But the bottom line is that we are documentarians, in a sense. We are historians. There are very few people that, in fact, one of the things I've done for Cleveland Park is to document it, so that all the people that have come through our doors.
And they're amazing photos that you take.
Yeah. And I've photographed to the simple people with a little kid. Sometimes I'm a little reticent about putting a picture of a child on. But I think that as long as the context is there and it's within the store looking
family,
at a map or something, you know, that's okay.
Yep.
But the bottom line is that we have recorded, you and I, a lot of what goes on in life. And I think that's important, because there are fewer people that are willing to give credit to others because, you know, probably just because they don't understand that that's important, that at some point my good friend Stephen Daddario would pass away, and he did, writing at his desk. He just, fell onto his desk with a heart attack, and that was the end. And I am so thankful that I took many pictures of him before that, not knowing what I would ever do with them, but the fact that I respected him and I was able to share them with his son and with his niece and other people that were important in his life.
And I think that hits a point that I was talking about earlier before you arrived. I was saying one of the things I admired and I really loved about you is when I would do wine tastings at the shop at Cleveland Park, you would just be hanging out, taking pictures. I mean, just point and click, point and click, point. I mean, no, not like a photographer where you're like trying to get the perfect shot. You would just click away and whatever happened.
There you go.
That's life.
That. Yeah. That's really life.
Yeah. And I love
that. That's trusting in the fact that you don't exist as an island. Everyone today exists as an island that has to promote themselves, but technically we don't really. And you have to, in this case, you have to give homage to the camera. In this case, I'm using a Panasonic. It's a Lumix lens. I know that. And I'm fortunate I have the camera in front of me sometimes, so I can actually quote write the numbers on the actual camera down. Because I have to say that without the camera, without the brilliance of the camera and the eye of the camera, even though I am the one taking and pointing the picture, I have no bloody idea what I'm getting half the time. I've done it long enough that I know I'm going to get something.
Yeah, but one of the
things... I have to trust in the fact that I'm not completely in charge of everything, and I don't know always the outcome. And that's okay not to know the outcome. Sometimes it's the journey.
Yes.
It's always the journey. Look at everyone. My God, it's everyone talking about it. It's the journey.
And the people that take that journey with you. And how trusting they are, because I've seen you with your customers, and whereas most people get weirded out. If there's a microphone or a camera in front of their face, they shy away. They don't want their picture taken. Every one of your customers, they won't stop and pose. They'll just keep doing what they're doing. You know why they do it? It's because they know Tony, and they respect
Tony,
Malcolm. And they like Tony.
They know Malcolm.
Yeah. So and I remember one time I was in your shop. I was doing a wine tasting. I was like, oh, he's taking pictures. I broke my camera and tripod out, and I started making video. You remember that?
Yeah,
I want a copy
of that. I want to put that on my. And I want to put that on my blog.
It was like one of my. You did. You blogged about it.
I want it on my blog. I want you to transcribe it onto my blog.
It was like one of my first attempts.
It was brilliant. It was good. He took it off his goddamn blog, and that pisses me off.
I still got it on this computer. It's just.
Yeah,
it's,
you need to put it back on. Someone should look at it, not because it's of me, but it's because it's actually really. It's not just of me. It's really of Malcolm, because without Malcolm having done that, that would not have existed. It's true, I was a subject, the store was a subject, but without Malcolm having done it, there would not have been a good piece of video. He should put it back.
The real reason I took it off, I think I had a bad haircut. It's curly on top, and I was a mess back then.
Well, let me go ahead and use my crayons, my good pastels, oil pastels, and I'll redo your hair for you.
Yeah.
We can do a little bit of a touch-up, you know? No, I'm just saying that because, in fact, that was a well-done piece, and I did like it. And obviously, it's nice that I'm the subject, and the store is the subject. But if you really come right down about some things like that, there is much about the people that are doing them, because even though they're the silent voice within the enterprise or within the project. Without that person doing that, without that person taking the initiative, and so often what I've realized, one of the things that just scares the shit out of me, and maybe I shouldn't be, but I'm going to say that one of the things that scares the shit out of me is that when I don't have my camera and I ask someone to take a picture, they will take one picture, maybe two to be sure that it's okay, but they'll never take three, four, five, or six because they don't, for some reason, think that it's worthwhile. Well, having five or six pictures of something in a row that tell a story is invaluable in the sense that it reflects different aspects of that moment because there are different things that will come out in that particular series of shots, because there's always something in the background. There might be something in the foreground.
Yep.
You just have absolutely no idea because it's going on around you. And so for me, it's invaluable to do more than one or two or three, because it's nice to take, because I'm not doing a podcast or I'm not doing
a
video.
You're
still documenting on one level without the sound and without the voice, which is unfortunate. But yet the whole idea of a picture take, you know, telling so many different stories is true.
Yeah, and that's what I got. When I, speaking on that video that I made, it was more just to document a day in the life of what was going on in my life then. And I found it as a good outlet for me to kind of be creative and also blow off some steam and kind of show people, you know, what, or maybe just show myself, I guess. I don't know how many people saw it, but you saw it. And it was more to kind of show a day in the life of what I go through every day. And that's when I did that. And same thing with the podcast. You know, people have been asking, oh, what's the podcast about? Well, it depends where the conversation takes us. I don't know. You know, the past, I've done a couple on restaurants, wine, and movies. And just,
what are the restaurants you've done?
I've just done one. There's a gentleman, he owns a small business down in Gainesville, Virginia.
Wow.
Rick Marrero, and he opened up an Italian restaurant in the middle of nowhere.
What's it called?
Desiderio.
Desiderio.
Yeah, and he gave me a shot. Supplied his wines, and I worked with him for a number of years. But him and I, like yourself, we always kind of hit it off, and I knew there was something there. And we'd have, you know, as a sales rep, you don't have a lot of time to kind of shoot the shit. You have to get in, get out. You might get a couple words in while you're waiting in line or something like that. But I could always feel connections with people and vibe with them and know that there's something else there. And I find you interesting. I found Rick interesting. And now that I'm doing this, I'm like, you know, I just call people up and like, I find these people interesting. I don't know any A-list celebrities or politicians to interview.
You will. You'll meet them.
But,
they're there.
But I think it goes back to what we were saying about the community. You are the celebrity that I knew. I knew you before I even walked into the wine shop. I knew who Tony Quinn was.
How nice. Thank you. Wow, yeah, so, that's humbling. That humbles me.
But
really, honestly, that humbles me.
It's...
Completely. It floors me. It humbles me.
Yeah, we know.
Because that's my justification. That is my raison d'etre.
Yeah.
But that's my reason to be. Because technically, that's my thanks. And I never hear it. I mean, in this case, thank you, Malcolm, I hear. But generally, I never hear that. But the bottom line is, you have to do it because you believe it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Not because you're getting, because it's an angle and you're getting money and something out of it. You're getting a free trip. You're canoodling someone. You know, you're pulling the wool over someone. Someone, and you know, you're getting the better. You can do the ha 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 with three other people, and you all do ha ha ha.
Yeah, you
four
gotta
people
believe.
Doing ha 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 ha. I mean, that's shit.
Yeah.
You know, who the hell are those people? That's a group of four people that really don't have enough confidence in themselves that they got to sit together with three other people and do ha ha ha. I mean, that's just not right.
Hmm.
You know, you got to ask them. I'm sorry, that's terrible. I'm not really standing in judge of anyone, but to me, there seems to be a little bit of a disconnect there. The bottom line is that a couple things I did want to say before I forget. That Malcolm is a family man. He's clearly very proud of his child, clearly proud of his family. And everything he ever does on Facebook that I see really gives as much respect and honor and appreciation, love for, my God. Clearly, Malcolm is really, and this is something I see, because I don't see him enough, but I see it on the Facebook, is that it's clearly, clearly, clearly about his family and about his roots and about his wife and his child. Yeah. I don't know if there's two children, but there's at least one.
There's no wife.
Oh, there's no wife.
There's no wife.
Okay. Well, anyway, but the idea is it's about family. And that's what he promotes. He promotes the film. He promotes his family. He's gaga about film. I mean, insane. Insane about film, you know.
Pretty obsessed.
I mean, it's just really insane.
Too kind.
It's just, but the other thing that caught my attention, because I don't really, unfortunately, if you're an artist like I am, you have absolutely bloody no time to really do anything but do what you do, and you don't do it very well because you don't have enough time even to do what you do, so you just do little bits and pieces. But I do remember very, very, very succinctly looking at some of the stuff that Malcolm had done. And one of the things that blew me away, I mean, totally, absolutely floored me, absolutely floored me, was going to his, whatever, it's his Facebook page, his web page, and seeing all the bloody things he had done about mixed drinks and stuff. I mean, one thing after the other, yeah. One post after the other, I mean, going on and on and on. And I'm thinking, Jesus, this is brilliant. This is absolutely brilliant. Because, I mean, for me, that's a world I don't know. But
I'm taking all this in. I love this.
But
keep going.
No,
please.
But it's all true. And it, look, I mean, I'm a painter. I'm an artist. But I got to tell you, honestly, I don't say anything that's not true. And I never have. And as I said, I'm my worst enemy because I say the things I probably shouldn't say. But I hopefully say enough things that I should say that it's okay. And the bottom line is that... that's my sense of Malcolm. That's why when he emailed me out of the blue and said, let's do a podcast. I mean, hell, that
it got, was out of the blue.
And I thought, said to myself, God, a podcast. I remember like 4 or 5 years ago, podcasts. I didn't know that they even had podcasts anymore. And then I saw, well, they put them on YouTube. Wow, that's pretty neat. Because I've seen some incredible music things like Jimi Hendrix yeah. and one of my all-time favorite YouTube things in my family. Kids be ad nauseum about it is watching Susan Boyle saying, you know, oh, yeah. I had a dream on YouTube. That's got to be one of the most brilliant pieces I've ever seen in film ever, because it's the judge's reaction plus the people behind the scenes
pure.
Plus her doing this incredible song.
All captured, yeah.
And I played it over and over and over again, and my family kids me about that. But you know what? Brilliance is brilliance. And you always have to give credit to where it's deserved. And same thing with Malcolm.
The podcast is, and I've explained this before. It's just another way to have an outlet to connect with people. You know, not everyone's going to subscribe to it on iTunes. Hopefully, they will. But
we'll
for
have to
now,
work on it. I'm going to work on it.
But for now, it's not. Yeah, it's not. I'm not in it from
I didn't want to do it until we did it because I didn't want you to think that I was just I thought about it. This is my thinking about this whole thing because Malcolm had approached me about doing this, and I thought, well, you know what? I could jinx the whole thing. I could just go out and be just insane about it for a week before I do it, and do that because I believed in it, even though I didn't know exactly what I was doing, or I could do it afterwards when I know what I'm doing. And so I chose in this case to be, for a change, more reserved and more reticent and hold back a little bit. But I had thought about it, and it wasn't because I was scared to do it, but it was really more that I wanted to do it well and to do it with some knowledge. And now that we've had this opportunity to talk, now I can go ahead and completely endorse what he's doing, because it's on a human, very, very one-on-one, in this case, one-on-one-on-one, because there's three of us here. Even though we have a lovely, silent, beautiful lady in glasses, who I got to tell, I'm going to give her a big hug and a kiss at the end because she has been so nice. And I mean, I can't tell you how much I feel, we have a family of three here.
She's my one fan, my one audience member and fan.
So we have a family of three right now here in Vienna, and I got to tell you, that's priceless.
Yeah, yeah.
That whole idea about what's it worth, well, what it's worth is the fact that right now, if anyone hears what we've said, great, that would be nice. I'm going to certainly advertise it so people will come and listen to this. Because I've rarely in my whole life had a platform, and I have been thinking about these things for so long, not so much about the movie, not so much the fact that I met Tom Cruise and got to shake his hands and saw Katie Holmes behind him. Not so much the fact that I got to go up to Nicole Kidman in the metro of Cleveland Park and she was studying for her part, and I went up to her and saw her, recognized her, even though there were doubles in the movie. And I went right up to her, shook her hand, said, I'm Anthony Quinn, glad to meet you, before they pulled me away. And she looked up and she really realized who I was and smiled and waved to me. And that was worth $1 million, that smile and that wave.
Just so the listeners know where Tony is talking about in Cleveland Park, he's right adjacent, right across the street from the Uptown Theater, which is a very historic movie theater, one of my favorite spots to to go see movies. And you're a stone's throw away from, what, the National Zoo? Isn't that in...
Yeah, and the elephant house. Three elephants going strong for 10 pretty soon.
So the Uptown Theater hosts a lot of premieres. So you said Tom Cruise. I'm a big Tom. You know, I'm open about that. I get beat up a lot.
Robert Redford. Meryl Streep was there. You know, there was Muhammad Ali. There was Josh Hartnett. That was one of the greatest things I ever did in my personal life, because I gained some brownie points with my daughter, who called me up one day around the time the Pearl Harbor was out, and she said, you know, Dad, I hear that Josh Hartnett is going to be over at the Uptown Movie House. Do you think maybe you could, go over and at least see him? And I said to myself, and I said to her at the time, I'm pretty sure, I'm not only going to go over and look at him, I'm going to take pictures for you, and I'm going to get his bloody autograph for you.
Nice.
And so I go over there, and of course, and everyone's waiting on the red carpet, because that is one of the last bastions where you can have a red carpet. You know, people like Arch Campbell are there, all the really nice, you know, all the different TV stations are covering the thing, and I've seen many, many openings, but the only one that really, really, really meant something to me was getting to see Josh Hartnett and take pictures of him, because that was something that went back to my daughter.
Yeah.
That has more meaning than any, even though I got to talk to Nicolas Cage for a while.
And
also Benjamin Bratt, I got to talk to him for, and then he said, Tony, you know, there are other people here too besides you, you know.
Nice.
But the fact that I got to talk to Nicolas Cage and I got to tell him that he was absolutely brilliant in...
Con Air.
No. He was brilliant. No, that was violent. What he was brilliant in was Peggy Sue Got Married. And he's sitting in...
One of the great time travel movies.
And when he's sitting in his own car with a beautiful, beautiful... what's her name? Help me out.
She was in Romancing the Stone.
Yeah, the famous...
Kathleen Turner.
When he's there with Kathleen Turner sitting in, and she's going on and on and on about, you know, his little Willie or his little friend, his little
great
Charlie.
Friend.
And he's getting all embarrassed. And those he's saying, well, you know, you can't do that. Those are guys' lines, you know,
yeah.
You know. I mean, so I got to tell him that I love that movie and I love that scene.
He's got an amazing resume. I mean, people always knock him, but he's got an amazing. I mean, Peggy Sue Got Married. That's basically the female
version
of Back to the Future. I mean, it's an amazing film. For those of you who haven't seen it.
And on top of that, when Kathleen Turner gets up, and she's with a motorcycle dude that did the writing and everything in the movie. This is all about the movie. And they go off on the back. She's on the back of his motorcycle. They go up in the countryside to smoke some weed. And she gets up, and she, because he asks her what she wants to do with her life. And she gets up, and she says, I just want to dance. And she swirls around dancing. And it's one of the most passionate and most, for me, heartfelt scenes I've ever seen in my whole life. And it's like 5 seconds, and she came and did something at the Kennedy Center. She did a play here not too long ago, and I wrote probably a 10-page letter, which I went and sent off to her, mm-hmm. hoping she would respond to it. Not a word.
Yeah,
probably thought I was a madman, you know, a stalker or something.
It happens.
So I'm really sad about that. I did keep a copy, so I might at some point publish some of these things. But the bottom line was, when I got to take the photographs of Josh Hartnett in the Pearl Harbor movie, and the guy that was working with me, Ravinder Sharma, comes over and says, Tony, you got to get back to the store. Everyone's wanting to talk to you. And I said, well, I got to get his signature. And Robbie said to me, well, don't worry, Tony. I'm going to get you his signature. You go back and sell wine. So I go back and sell wine. And damned it if Robbie or Ravinder Sharma doesn't come back with a signature from Josh Hartnett. And what's really funny about that is you have to understand, here's an Indian man who is older, in his 50s, standing there with all these young, little, beautiful girls that are probably 20 and under, mm-hmm. you know, just absolutely in love with Josh Hartnett.
And here's
this gentleman who's 50, and he's Indian and not a beautiful man. You know, of course, he's a beautiful man, as beautiful as these beautiful, you know, 20 and under girls. And he manages to get his signature, probably from Josh, because who the hell is this man? I better give him a signature, because I mean, he was probably a little shocked. So I got my signature, and I got my photographs. And for me, the thing that was absolutely essential was that my daughter probably got a week's worth of really great attention from people, classmates, and people in the school, because they all want to see the pictures, and they all want to see the signature.
And that's what it's all about,
man. And that's what it's about, family.
Yeah, I agree. So there we have it. We're sitting down with Tony Quinn of Cleveland Park Wine and Spirits. I just want to say I just had a wonderful time talking with you. I could go on and on about the movies. We're going to have to do this again.
We will. Maybe we'll have to talk about all the Uptown things, because there are many more.
Yeah, maybe we can do, because he brought like a photo album of just...
I'll bring the photos next time so Malcolm can see them.
Because we could talk for... We could do a 3-4 hour podcast.
But I got to tell you one really fast little thing I did really enjoy. The very last thing I want to say, because it's about movies.
Yep.
And you both will appreciate this. I got to meet Linda Carter.
Wonder Woman.
And I got to meet her back in the
80s. I was in love with her with a vengeance back in the day.
And I got to meet her just maybe after she had done Wonder Woman.
She lives in this area, right?
She does. She married a senator here.
Yep.
Well, anyway, around that time.
The lasso of truth. I would love for her to put that around me. God.
Well, I'm telling you, she came into, this was when I was managing Burkus Wines and Spirits on Wisconsin Avenue. She came in and she had been either for a run or she had been playing baseball, or maybe both. But she had a lovely, she had a glow to her. She had a baseball, she had a baseball cap on.
She used to make me have a glow.
I'm telling you, I couldn't even recognize her, and I didn't know who it was for a while. It took me after the sale, but what I did was for Linda Carter, I sold her some real French champagne, and then I finally realized that I'd sold champagne to Linda Carter. She came back a second time, and I knew who she was at that point. I didn't say who she was to her. I let it be our little secret, and I enjoyed that, because for me, that was our little secret, and I sold her some more French champagne.
Yeah.
And that was one of those really magical moments. They're little tiny moments, like when I had that split second with, you know, Nicole Kidman. That was a split second when I shook Tom Cruise's hand.
Tom Cruise.
But I got to tell you, Nicolas Cage was the guy for me.
Yeah.
Personally, for me, it was Nicolas Cage. You know, I loved him.
Celebrities are always fun to meet. And I'm definitely going to enjoy picking your brain more in the future. So, yes, we're going to have to set up another podcast with Tony and kind of go into his artistic side, because I do want to explore your poetic side and the art that you do that I see on your social media. Tell the people again where they can find your blog.
It's called Chat Wine on blogspot.com.
And he's also on Facebook under his real name, which
Anthony
is
Quinn.
There you go.
And you have to do Anthony Quinn-Annandale, because I live in Annandale, Virginia.
There you go.
So that's how you find this particular Anthony Quinn, because there is the famous actor who I respect. I do call myself Zorba the Greek, named after the famous Anthony Quinn, who was actually Antonio Reyna, who became Antonio Quinn. And then a queen became Quinn, because Quinn is obviously an easier word to say than queen. So it became Antonio Quinn, Quinn, or Anthony Quinn. And, of course, here he is playing a Mexican, playing an incredible Greek role with an Englishman that needed to learn, needed to learn how to live his life and not just be a scholar and a reader. And so here you have... a gentleman playing, a Mexican playing a lovely Greek, man called Zorba, and they did a venture that failed, and there they are on the beaches of one of the islands in Greece. The venture had just failed, and here Anthony Quinn has his arms around this Englishman, and they're dancing on the beach. There is absolutely very little in cinema that is wonderful, as heartwarming and ingratiating, is even though disaster is there, it's looming, it's really clear as can be, you still have hope. And you know what? As long as we have life in us, Malcolm and myself and...
Miriam,
we'll fight the good fight.
That's right.
We will keep the dream alive. We will keep the small independent stores alive, in this case, wine stores. And we will do what's bloody goddamn right, you know, because it's the right thing to do, whether or not we're getting paid or not.
That's right. And
thank you, Malcolm.
Yes, sir. And there you have it. That's straight from the words of Tony Quinn. And with that, looking forward, we will have another Tony coming up soon. Tony Guida of the Washington West Film, not the Washington West, the Washington Wine and Cheese Seminar. You know Tony Guida.
I know him, and he can marry people. So you need to ask him about marrying people. And on top of that, you also have to ask him about his incredible pig fest. He does an incredible pig fest.
I've been. He played a key
Malcolm
role.
Malcolm knows all about that.
Yes,
okay.
He played a key role into my education in the wine business. But we'll talk about that with Tony Guida, a.k.a.
Washington Wine and Cheese Seminar.
They drink wine at church on Tuesday night.
You got Sandy and Randy, and you got... Barbara and
it's a whole crew of them that hang and stick very tight talking about community. So we have Tony Guida coming up. We have the return of Rick Marrero, the restaurateur.
I don't know Rick. Who's
Rick?
He?
Rick owns Desiderio, the wine.
Oh, you've been
the restaurant.
About.
Yes.
So we'll do it.
So we're going to talk him. We're going to bring Tony Quinn back. And with that, guys, I will see you next time. Miriam, you're going to take us out tonight. You're going to say lead us out? All right, Miriam's not going to do it. Domino, motherfucker.